So Governor, welcome to the Libertarian Party and welcome to San Antonio.
I would like to tell you who I am. I did take third place in the presidential race. I got 1,300,000 votes. So I did get 1,300,000 votes, and I do believe and did believe that I am uniquely qualified to be president of the United States, but I'd like you to be the judge on that. I'm going to also hand out some advice this evening, and my advice is worth exactly what you're paying for it, which is nothing, all right? But the first bit of advice that I want to give you is whatever it is you do, apply it entrepreneurially. Be an entrepreneur. Create your own job. Create other jobs. There's nothing more rewarding than doing your own thing and being rewarded for it. The rewards are terrific, and it'll never be easier than doing that tomorrow. As difficult as it'll be to do that tomorrow, it'll never be easier. Another is understanding that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. That's the thing you need to plan for. Things go wrong, and it's your ability to deal with that adversity that determines whether or not you're successful or not in life. A lot of people encounter adversity and they crawl up on the couch and that's it, and that's it for the rest of my life. That's one way of dealing with it. Another way of dealing with it is deal with it and move on. It happens all the time. I like to think of life as a movie. I like to think of my life as a movie. I'm the producer, I'm the director, and I'm the star. Do I like what I see on the movie screen? And if you don't like what you see on the movie screen, who's in charge? You are. You can change what you see, and it'll never be easier than to do it immediately. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. I did start a construction business, a handyman business, in 1974, and actually grew it to be the largest construction employer in the state of New Mexico, over 1,000 employees in 1994. It's just amazing what happens when you show up on time, when you do what you say you'll do for people, when you do a little bit more than what you'll say, you'll do for people. You know, it's just amazing. I sold that business in 1999. Nobody lost their job. Business is doing better than ever. But I learned a couple of things in business that I think are really important. One is share in the profits. It's amazing when you share in the profits and everybody's pulling the wagon in the same direction. It's a magic formula. Share in the profits. Another thing that I learned, I may have hired and fired more people than every other presidential candidate running for president in 2012 combined. I may have done that, all right? And let me tell you about hiring and firing, and I realize a lot of you understand this, but there is nothing easier than hiring people. You go through this process, you pick out the best people that you possibly can, and you hire them, and it's kind of fun, and you never make mistakes. Well, you do make mistakes. And if you can't correct those mistakes, you end up broke. So you gotta fire people. And there's nothing harder than firing people, but if you can't do it, you end up broke. So this is actually the breakdown in government. The breakdown in government is, the public sector is, we elect a whole lot of people who have never hired and fired. And because they've never hired and fired, they find it really easy to hire. And because firing is so difficult, there's nothing harder than firing people in the public sector, they avoid firing people. So it becomes very, very dysfunctional. In the case of Obama, never hired, never fired. He hired a whole bunch of people who have never hired, or more importantly, fired, And that's how dysfunctional all that is. And then you had Mitt Romney saying during one of the debates, I love firing people. I hate firing people. Nothing is more difficult than firing people, but if you can't do it, you don't end up being successful. I have a wonderful family. I've got a daughter, Saya, 34, a son, Eric, 31, fiance, Kate Prusak. I'm in love. We're going to get married one of these days, but it's terrific. And a year ago, at this time, we were, as a family outing, we were climbing Aconcagua, the highest mountain in South America. And everything that can go wrong will go wrong, right? On summit day, we get up, we're ready to go at 4 a.m. We take off at 4 a.m. The temperature is probably minus 50 degrees because of wind chill. We're at 20,000 feet. We're going to 23,000 feet. At 21,000 feet, the guide plops down. Hello, you okay? No, I'm too cold. I'm going back down. It took me about 10 seconds to realize that this is going to make a great story for the rest of my life. Well, how do we get to the top? I mean, come on. Anyway, without the guide, we made it to the top just fine and everything worked out. But anything that can go wrong will go wrong. I'm also a competitive athlete. I am a competitive athlete. That's an oxymoron. I'm 61 years old. How can you be a competitive athlete? Last year, I did the 24-hour mountain bike national championships. Going into it, I thought I would be the national champion for 60-plus. Well, it turns out that they only had one category for solo male participants, and that was open. So I ended up taking 15th out of 60 in that class, and nobody older than me finished ahead of me. I do have a goal to climb the highest mountain on each of the seven continents, and I have one of those to go, Antarctica, and the plan is to do that a year from now. I'm also a pilot. I've been in gas balloon competitions. You know what? I've had a big bucket list, and I've been fortunate to be able to get after that bucket list. I got elected governor of New Mexico. I'd never been involved in politics prior to running for governor of New Mexico. I mean, I hadn't even pounded in a campaign sign. Republican Party says, wow, we like you, we like what you've got to say, but man, you need to know, you will never get elected. It's not possible. Well, how did I get elected? Well, I paid for my own campaign. I mean, I paid for all of it. And what I said was, and New Mexico's 2-1 Democrat. What I said was, let's bring a common sense business approach to state government. I'm going to put issues first, politics last, because I'm not a politician. I mean, let's actually deal with the issues that we have. And I got elected, and I got reelected. One of the things I distinguished myself in the area of was I vetoed 750 bills when I was governor of New Mexico. Only one of them was overridden. Now, to put this into perspective, this was more vetoes than the other 49 governors in the country combined, right? Okay? So what people don't understand is that the majority of legislation that passes is fix-up language for prior legislation. Well, I got to tell you, I signed that stuff, but I vetoed 750 bills, and I tell you what, I should have vetoed a lot more, because what I have come to recognize after having been governor are those bills that I signed really, in essence, grew government. And I signed a whole bunch of legislation. Let me give you one example of one piece of legislation. It was establishing the Bureau of Indian Affairs in New Mexico. I got that bill 2 times. I vetoed it 2 times. Look, we're making this happen anyway, and I don't want to create another agency in state government. So I veto it 2 times. Well, along comes the bill the 3rd time. Governor Johnson, we're going to establish the Bureau of Indian Affairs in New Mexico without any taxpayer money. And sure enough, no taxpayer money involved. I thought, wow, I am victorious here. I signed the legislation for the entire rest of the time I'm in office. Not 1 cent went to this bureau, but guess what? I leave office, and now it's a burgeoning bureaucracy, and that's just one example of really dozens of examples that I could cite that started out fine under the Johnson administration, but guess what? I end up leaving office. So all of that said, don't I have to be a popular guy in New Mexico? I mean, really. And I have a good understanding of popularity, I guess, being governor, and it goes like so. I'm riding my motor. This is when I was governor. I'm riding my motorcycle through the Jemez, and I got on all the body armor, right? I got on the helmet. I stop at a burger bar. I order a burger. You know, I'm looking pretty tough, I think. And the waitress, she goes, "Man, I'll bet a lot of people tell you you look like Gary Johnson." And I'm like, "Yeah, they do." And she goes, "That has got to piss you off. That has just got to piss you off." So I feel like I understand what it is to be a politician, all right? I think I would be the next president of the United States if people would have just heard what I had to say. And I base this on the website isidewith.com. Did any of you see the website isidewith.com during the last election? 3.5 million people got online, isidewith.com, 3.5 million people got online. They took a 36-question questionnaire, answered 36 questions, and then got paired up with the presidential candidate most in line with their views. Based on 3.5 million people getting online, I was the next president of the United States based on that poll, which I think was very, very scientific. So what are the issues? What are the issues that the majority of Americans think and feel? What is it that I think and feel? Well, I think that number one, we need to balance the federal budget. I think that unless we balance the federal budget, I think we're going to find ourselves in a monetary collapse where we're not going to have goods and services to deliver to anyone or anybody. The other thing is I think we need to reform taxes in this country in a really big way. So what I propose, eliminate the income tax, eliminate corporate tax, abolish the IRS. And I'm not doing this in a vacuum, all right? I had 20 free market economists, renowned economists that were, helping me out in this whole thing. And what they all said is, this is what needs to be done to reform taxes in this country. Is what we need to do is abolish the IRS, eliminate income tax, eliminate corporate tax, and then replace all that with a one federal consumption tax. Now, I think a starting point for how you accomplish that is, let's just take the template of the fair tax and see if we can make that happen. So under a scenario where there's no corporate tax, how would there not be tens of millions of jobs created in this country as opposed to anywhere else in the world because of a zero corporate tax rate? And I think it would stimulate the economy. Imagine not having to deal with the IRS. Imagine getting your entire payroll check. And then lastly, you know, talking about the Federal Reserve, what a rigged game that is. And I would sign legislation abolishing the Federal Reserve if that were presented to me, but it's not going to be presented to me. It's not going to happen. So let's return the Federal Reserve to its original mandate of dealing with inflation as opposed to its dual mandate of inflation and full employment. I think they work against one another. And if you're going to balance the federal budget, that means dealing with major reform of Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. You got to do that. I think for Medicaid and Medicare, you devolve these services to the states, you give a fixed amount of money to the states that balances the federal budget, and you let the states draw new lines of eligibility. I happen to be in the camp that believes that there are those that are truly in need, that without government, they're not going to be able to survive. I just think we've gone way over the line when it comes to drawing that line. And based on my time as governor of New Mexico, I believe in my heart of hearts that I could have overseen the drawing of new lines of eligibility that would have helped those truly in need and would have done it for a lot less money. And then Social Security. Talking about the fair tax, talking about a national consumption tax, the proceeds for Social Security would come out of this national consumption tax. It would not be withheld from your payroll check. So a couple things when it comes to Social Security, you know, raising the retirement age, these are things that need to be done. You could have a very fair means testing that went along with it. And then you should have opt-in, opt-out provisions that would allow you to invest that money. Stop with our military interventions. We have hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that would not, arguably, would not exist but for our military interventions. These drone strikes, they don't just hit the target, they kill thousands of innocent civilians. And imagine if anybody in this room were killed as a result of a drone strike, I dare say that everybody else in the room would vow vengeance against that perpetrating country, up to and including giving your own life to seek that vengeance. And that's exactly what we've got going on today. And then when it comes to the NSA, stop spying on us. Repeal the Patriot Act. Due process. Where's the due process? A FISA court that hears a request to monitor 110 Verizon phone call users all the time and grants that authority to do that? That is not a due process. Uphold the Second Amendment to the Constitution, the right to bear arms. And gee, while we're at it, how about upholding the Constitution, period? Yeah. ? 90% of the drug problem is prohibition related, not use related, and that is not to discount the problems with use and abuse, but that should be the focus. The fact that we arrest 1.8 million people a year in this country, half of those arrests, today, we arrest 1.8 million people a year in this country on drug-related crime. We arrest, of that, 900,000 of those are marijuana arrests. 3/4 of all those arrests are for possession only. We have tens of millions of Americans who are now convicted felons that, but for our drug laws, would otherwise be taxpaying, law-abiding citizens. So let's legalize marijuana now. And it's happening. Colorado, Washington, Washington State. This is a tipping point. It's here and it's going to happen. And Colorado, many years ago, citizens of Denver voted to decriminalize marijuana on a campaign based on marijuana being safer than alcohol. And having smoked marijuana and having drank alcohol, of which I no longer do either, but having done that, I can tell you that marijuana is much, much safer than alcohol. And it has always been my contention that legalizing marijuana will actually lead to less substance abuse because of the safer alternative that it is. Education. When I was governor of New Mexico, no one was more outspoken regarding school choice than I was. Let's bring competition to public education. So what we need to understand is there's a Khan Academy out there right now. Many of you are familiar with the Khan Academy. You can get a free education online, kindergarten through a doctoral degree in any subject whatsoever, and it's free. That's the model that we should be looking toward. It's terribly exciting. It's a free market approach to education. And when it comes to the federal government, the best thing the federal government can do is get out of education completely. Abolish the Federal Department of Education. Why abolish the Federal Department of Education? They give 11 cents out of every school dollar that every state spends, but that 11 cents comes with 16 cents worth of strings attached. So it actually costs states to take federal money. Healthcare. Free market approach to healthcare. Let's reject the insurance model completely. Look, in a In a free market approach to health care, all of us would have health care insurance to cover ourselves for catastrophic injury and illness. And then we would pay as you go in a system that was genuinely free market, genuinely competitive. The government could engage in blowing the lid off of supply. When this whole thing started on the healthcare debate, I had envisioned gallbladders are us. Healthcare clinics that would specialize in gallbladder surgery at thousands of dollars as opposed to tens of thousands of dollars. This can happen all the way across the board if we would just open healthcare up to genuine, genuine free market. Marriage equality. I think that marriage equality is constitutionally guaranteed. I think it's on par with civil rights of the 60s. And look, if we wouldn't have passed the Civil Rights Bill of the 60s, would there still be discrimination, segregation in the South today? I think there probably would be. It's the right thing to do. So constitutionally guaranteed. Immigration. The notion of building a fence across the border is the craziest thing that I have ever heard of in my entire life. We build a 20-foot fence across the border? Well, that's going to take a 24-foot ladder. Well, let's build a 100-foot fence across the border, and then we'll have the most sophisticated tunnel system in the entire world underneath the fence. So it's just ludicrous. Let's make it as easy as possible for somebody that wants to come into this country to get a work visa. I'm not talking about a green card, I'm not talking about citizenship, but just a work visa. And you know what? If we enact the fair tax, if we enact a consumption tax, nobody avoids paying a consumption tax. Nobody. Whether you're a visitor, whether you're an illegal entrant to the United States, legal immigrant, visitor, U.S. citizen, nobody avoids paying that. And we're going to need tens of millions of immigrants to fill the jobs that we're going to need if we'll adopt a zero corporate tax. Abortion. Is there a more contentious issue out there when it comes to life than abortion? And I will just man, you are all wonderful to be here in lieu of what's going on in there. But if you're a social conservative, I respect anybody that's a social conservative. Live your life by example. That's how you positively affect other human beings. And if you are a social conservative, the way that you affect other human beings is you live your life by example and you try and bring that example to change outcomes, if you will. But if you're talking about government policy to change outcomes, then you end up criminalizing activity that should not be criminalized. As difficult the decision is on abortion, it should be the woman involved that makes that choice. In Environmental Protection Agency, just an example of what is the fundamental role of government to protect us against individuals, groups, corporations, foreign governments that would do us harm. I think that the EPA comes under that heading of protecting us. Based on my experience as governor of New Mexico, there are polluters out there, genuine polluters. And I realize there's an argument that as an individual, you can sue those polluters and bring to bear justice. But I'll tell you what, it's really hard to sue unlimited deep pockets. In this case, the government does do that. And I base that on my experience as governor of New Mexico, where there were genuine polluters that, but for government, they would have continued to pollute as they had done for decades prior to me and weren't touched because of politics. The ACLU came out with a report card during the last presidential race on civil liberties. And whether you agree with the ACLU or disagree with the ACLU, this is a group that's dedicated to preserving civil liberties. This is a group dedicated to the Constitution of the United States. 26 liberty torches was a perfect score. Let's see. Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, and Mitt Romney had one liberty torch between the three of them out of 26. In third place was Barack Obama with 16 liberty torches. In second place was Ron Paul with 18 Liberty Torches. And in first place was moi with 21 Liberty Torches, something that I'm really proud of. Wrapping up, Gary Johnson's 7 principles of good government. Number 1 is become reality driven. Find out what's what and base your decisions and actions on that. Number 2 is always be honest and tell the truth. It's extremely difficult to do harm to somebody who's willing to tell the truth regardless of the circumstances. Number 3 is always do what's right and fair. Remember, the louder your critics become, the more you're accomplishing. You got to learn to ignore your critics and continue to do what you know is right. Number 4, determine your goal, develop a plan to reach that goal, and then act. Don't procrastinate. Number 5, make sure everybody who ought to know what you're doing knows what you're doing. Communicate. Number 6, don't hesitate to deliver bad news. We all make mistakes, but acknowledge them and move on. And it's never easier than acknowledging these mistakes immediately. And then lastly, full circle, get a job that you love. If you don't have a job that you love, quit. Quit and get one tomorrow that you'll love getting up and doing what it is that you want to do. Thank you all very much for coming this evening. The competition is enormous. It is. And you're here. What your contributions allow me to stay in the game, if you will, to provide a voice that I hope you recognize doesn't really exist out there. And not that any one of you here couldn't provide that same voice, but I happen to be in this role right now, and I'm trying to do the best I can. I can't do it without your help, and you've provided that. Thank you very, very much. And so if there's any time left, and Gil can be the moderator, open it up to any questions, any comments, any insults maybe that any of you have. What is the score?
What's the 20 to 17?
What is it? 20 to 17.
What's the one thing we can do to help you the most?
What's the one thing that you can do to help me the most? You've done it. You genuinely have. We estimated that last campaign that what you need to win, what you need to be able to leverage is $40 million out of the chute. Well, this isn't $40 million, but this is funds that allow me to stay in this game, if you will. Allows me to stay in the game, keep talking about the issues, and potentially be able to do that. Over the last 4 years, it turns out that about 90% of what I did ended up to be wasted time. Now, you don't know it's wasted time when you're doing it, and you can only say that in retrospect, right? Well, this go-round, I'm not going to repeat any of the 90% expecting different results. So it's really refreshing, I got to tell you. I mean, it gets back to the 7 principles, and like I say, it's a new frontier. I'm a great games person too. I play a pretty good game of chess, and I know there's somebody here who wants some blood. Yeah, wants some blood. But anyway.
So what are you doing to raise that $40 million? You got what, $3 million in the last election?
Right. Got $3 million in the last election. What are we doing to raise the $40 million? Well, of course you can't raise the $40 million unless you are actually a viable voice. So today I'm on Alex Witt, MSNBC, and I've been on her show maybe so I got to talk to maybe 5 million people today by being on her show for 12 minutes. You can't raise the $40 million if you're not viable, and all of this is just viability. I'm not saying it's going to happen, because it didn't happen last time, and I don't want to be unrealistic here. I want to be reality driven. I know what the formula is. You got to be out there. You got to be viable. And at a point, you have to catch fire. And based on my experience, I think it's possible to do that. It hasn't happened.
I'm curious more about the Our America initiative. I know you're doing some initiatives in different states and particular issues. Tell me more about what you're doing there.
Well, our America, I mean, it gives me a platform to talk about these issues. And if you've heard any politician say what I said here tonight on a national scale, please let me know, and maybe I'll just let them take over. So our America allows us to do that. We've had marriage equality initiatives in several states. We've had gun rights issues in several states. You know, I went to Colorado dozens of times to promote marijuana legalization in Colorado. What's amazing, and let's not discount what Libertarian has done here over a very, very short amount of time. I mean, if you just look at marriage equality, it's happening big time. If you look at marijuana legalization, it's at the tipping point. It's happening. And then let's take Syria as an example. Congress and the president were loaded up to go into Syria, and then came along an 80% survey of Americans that said, don't go into Syria. So let's not discount what effect libertarian ideas and beliefs are having on the system in spite of not being elected to public office. And I'm not just talking about myself, but other offices. These issues are being talked about and embraced by everybody. All right. Thank you very, very much. Thank you very, very much.
Were there any more questions? No more questions? Yes, Scott.
So that was my initial position. That was my initial position. Get government out of the marriage business. Well, here's what I was informed. There are about 4,000 federal laws on the books that gives advantage to married couples as opposed to non-married couples. If you eliminate income tax and eliminate the IRS, you eliminate about 80% of the issues associated with marriage equality. But if you get government out of the business, which it philosophically sounds terrific, what you end up having to do is you end up having to have 4,000 pieces of legislation to change the language, back to changing language, fix-up language. You have to have 4,000 pieces of fix-up language to fix the marriage equality, meaning get the government out of marriage. It becomes very impractical. The very, very practical way is, and I do believe it is constitutional outside of all that, but aside from being constitutional, it's the most efficient way to bring it about, is to just recognize marriage equality.
Do you plan on running in 2016? And if so, is 5% of the electorate for federal funding of the next election important to you?
Well, am I going to run the next election, and is federal funding important?
Is that a goal?
Well, I can't actually say. I mean, I get to be the spokesperson for Our America. To say that I'm not considering it, well, certainly I'm considering it. But to be victorious or to have a chance at winning, I'm going to throw out this $40 million figure. By the way, during the last presidential race, we thought it was $40 million, and Ron Paul had raised $40 million in 2008. Ron Paul also raised $40 million plus in 2012. I wasn't expecting Ron Paul to enter into the race, which is okay, he did, but he sucked the money out of the room. He sucked the money out of the room. And right now, the money is being sucked out of the room by Rand Paul. And Rand Paul, I think, is terrific when it comes to about 60% of the issues.
You mentioned the Fair Tax. Is there any particular organization that's kind of running point on that?
Fairtax.org. Fairtax.org, it's a proposal before Congress. I believe 150 70 congressmen and women have signed on to the bill to this point. And yeah, it's a very viable proposal. Go to fairtax.org. It lays it out. Well, what's your solution to infrastructure? And I base this too on having been governor of New Mexico. To me, really, it's a fundamental role of government. So we improved on infrastructure. We cut spending in many other areas and actually put it toward roads and didn't raise 1 cent of tax over the entire period that I was governor, something that had never happened before. But you know what? There's money for infrastructure, but is there money for the Department of Defense? I mean, what an oxymoron! The Department of Offense should we really be spending as much money in that area? It's reallocating, and yeah, infrastructure is one of the cornerstones, I think, of what government needs to deliver. Did my experience as a contractor affect what happened in New Mexico?
Did it inform your decisions on how to redo the infrastructure in New Mexico?
Did my having been a contractor affect the roads and how I viewed roads and road construction? Did it give me insight to do it better than a regular bureaucrat? Let me just say, my experience in business and as an entrepreneur gave me insight to run everything better. It was just this simple. Best product, best service at the lowest price. I mean, that simple. We built 500 miles of new four-lane highway when I was governor of New Mexico and didn't raise a penny of tax to do that. We came up with a system of measuring highways, and we improved on the highways from when we took office until we left, something that had never happened before either. But go down the list. I'll be the first one to tell you areas that I had the least impact. The area that I had the least impact on was education. I mean, all you do is put more money into it. That's all you do. And you put more and more and more and more money into it, and by all measurements, you do worse and worse and worse. And it took me about a year to come to grips with that, a year and a half to come to grips with that, and I became more outspoken regarding school choice than any governor in the country. For 6 straight years, I proposed full-blown vouchers in the state of New Mexico to bring competition to public education, something no other governor did.
Gasoline taxes, we've got state, local, and federal. Aren't they supposed to go to what we call infrastructure and roads?
I've always said that the best example of a libertarian tax, best example, is the gas tax, because ostensibly all of the money that gets collected by the gas tax is supposed to go to roads. Well, that's really been somewhat co-opted in states, but really that is the funding source. And talking about crumbling infrastructure, there was plenty of money to do this stuff. So I just have to believe that federally there's plenty of money. Now back to a national consumption tax. Gasoline would be subject to a national consumption tax, and the proceeds of that would go to highways. Of course, we got alternative fuel vehicles now that really it's going to be an issue. I mean, some people are riding on the roads, if you will, for free or a lot less money than others that are riding on the road.
About the Federal Reserve, and you said as far as changing it, having it just be addressing inflation, is there any other, reason that you would just, that other than they wouldn't ever bring it towards you or to your desk?
No, it wouldn't. I mean, that's the reality. Congress in my lifetime is not going to abolish the Federal Reserve. In my opinion, that's being reality driven. So get the Federal Reserve back to its original mandate of controlling inflation. To me, that represents a strong U.S. dollar as opposed to a weak U.S. dollar. And it's an inside game. It's an absolute inside game. When the Federal Reserve loans money to the banks at 0%, we don't see a bit of that. And it allows the banks then to carry all the assets that they currently have that are underwater. It allows them to carry those assets forward until we inflate those assets because of this burgeoning money that's out there. And that's the situation we have right now. And it's a bubble. It's an artificial bubble that's been created by the Federal Reserve. And I think it's going to have an unhappy ending. You know, what should you do? People ask me, well, what should you do with your money? Well, buy tangible assets. I mean, that's one thing that you should do. I mean, buy tangible assets. At some point in a monetary collapse, it ends up sorting itself out. And at the end of the day, you still own your assets, and now you got a new price fix to it. If you're thinking about a new car or doing home improvements, do them. It'll never be cheaper than doing them now, because inflation, in my opinion, has to happen given the amount of money that has been pumped into the system, which all currently resides at the banks. The banks haven't let go of any of this money, but they're going to start to let go of this money. And when they do, in my opinion, we're going to be looking at hyperinflation, possibly. And I realize none of it exists today. I mean, that's what everybody's beating their chests over. But I have to believe that down the road, this is going to occur.
What is your opinion of the Common Core curriculum that they are now pushing in all of the schools compared to our traditional classical form of education?
I want to leave education to the local level. That's what I want to do. I want to let you decide how you run your educational system. And then, hey, we're smart. The internet exists. What are the successes? What are the failures? And, you know, go for it. Make yourself the most successful program in the country, and that's what we should establish, this whole notion of 50 states competing to be the best. And guess what? There are going to be some big, big winners. There are going to be some big, big losers. I think on the winner side, it's going to be those states that our free market are really looking to bring an alternative to public education. Yes.
What's your opinion of the Bitcoin phenomenon?
You know, I'm intrigued by it. I see projections where, you know, it's going to go to $7,500 this year, but when I see Bitcoin priced at, this is what, 6 weeks ago, when I see Bitcoin priced at $1,200 one day, and then China comes out with some statements on Bitcoin, and the next day it's selling at $600, I'm not into Bitcoin at the moment. But I also respect the fact that Fortress Investment Company, you know, the big hedge fund, you know, the smartest guys on Wall Street, have set up a $140 million fund for Bitcoin. That got my attention also. So. And I had it demonstrated to me very clearly yesterday about Bitcoin. So I may buy some Bitcoins. I'm not going to put everything I have into Bitcoin.
I want to ask you about the minor parties. That's what they're called here in Texas, as opposed to the Republican Democratic parties, which are called major parties here. What about getting ballot access in more of the states, all the states, some states don't allow the minor parties on the ballots.
All I can say is I'm not a hypocrite when it comes to third party. When I was governor of New Mexico, I signed legislation that made it as easy as possible to be on the ballot. I did that because I think that competition is at the heart of this country. I will offer up what I think is a very, very fair it'd be great to see this as a law, but if you have, so in the presidential elections, if you're on the ballot in enough states to become the next president of the United States, and I was on the ballot in 48 states, I was an official write-in candidate in Michigan. The only state I wasn't on the ballot was Oklahoma. But if you could potentially qualify for president of the United States, how about a requirement that your name appear in any poll as to who can be the next president of the United States? That in and of itself being a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, who's Gary Johnson? Well, maybe I'll check it out. I just think it'd be old, you know, unquestionably fair.
And the debates as well, right?
Well, so the debates, you know, the debates are that you have to be 15% in the polls. Well, okay, how can you be 15% in the polls if your name doesn't appear in the polls? And that was the issue that I had in the Republican primaries last time, was you had to be at 2 or 3% to be in these debates, and based on ABC poll, I wasn't in ABC poll. And whenever I was in the polls, I was showing the same numbers as those that were on stage, or bigger numbers than those that were on stage. It was terribly unfair.
$40 million?
That didn't have anything to do with $40 million. That was somebody at the... And this is the boardroom of the media. This isn't the front line media. This is the boardroom of the media that decides whose name gets on the polling. CNN, last presidential election. CNN every 2 weeks they did a national poll on who would you vote for president. Well, after the Florida debate, they included my name for the first time. First time they included my name. And in that poll, I was tied with Herman Cain. I was ahead of Santorum, and I was ahead of Huntsman, and they had a debate coming up in like 2 weeks. We thought, finally, this is done with. This is done and buried. That was the last time my name appeared in their polls, and they gave no reason whatsoever for why that was the case. A little frustrating. What do I feel about term limits? I think term limits may be a silver bullet. Really, limit the amount of time that a person can hold office? Terrific. Then the motivation, in my opinion, becomes doing the right thing as opposed to doing whatever it takes to get reelected. What is the score?
23-17.
23-17. Who's ahead?
Seattle, by six.
Seattle, wow. So 1 minute.
San Francisco's getting close.
22 seconds? Again, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.